Today on The Grave Talks, Feeling the Dead, a conversation with Julie Speer. Some people are just born with it, born with an ability to sense the world and the energy that surrounds us in a very different way than others. Oftentimes, these people's ideas and claims are pushed to the side, marked as crazy or an attempt to get attention. But maybe, just maybe, it's none of that. Maybe the reality that some people experience from a very young age is even more real than much of the population could ever contemplate. That's how life has been for Julie Speer. Today, we hear her story of living life as a sensitive empath and the journey that has taken her on The Grave Talks.
Well, it started when I was a little kid. It wasn't really that I had an interest in it. It was that I was sensitive to it. When I was a little girl, it started out, I would see colors around people and like colors and shapes of things like floating around. Mm-hmm. And I would ask my mom about it. She would be like, say that she didn't see it, but I would see it. And so it was like confusing to me as a little girl, and it was scary. But I would also hear like voices calling my name from the basement, whispers at night, spirits shaking my bed, and sometimes even pulling my covers off of me. Mm-hmm. They would turn my clock radio on and like change the stations. I would have things that would show up missing where I normally put it. And then like a day later, it'd be right back where I normally put it. And I really don't know where it came from, because it's not really in my family per se. Like my mom and dad, neither of them are sensitive. I'm kind of more of like a empath medium. Mm-hmm. Where I feel things, and I can feel things about, you know, the spirits and what they've been through, and, you know, sometimes hear their voices, you hear whispers and stuff. And over the years, I've learned how to deal with it and kind of block it out. And I started, you know, as I got older, I would sage, you know, my house a couple times a week, and that would help. So I, especially at night before I go to bed, I still do it like twice a week.
Wow.
Because it helps, you know, so nobody's waking me up at night.
That's so interesting. So let's try to unpack all of that to begin with. When you're seeing these colors and these shapes kind of floating around, was it around people? Was it kind of like their energy, kind of auras? Is that kind of what
yeah.
it was?
Okay. Yeah, it was around people. Like I would see it yeah. around people, and then I would see like colors and shapes with them.
So like, were you like visibly seeing this with your eyes, or were
yeah,
it was
with my eyes?
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's almost like, you know, kind of like there's, you know, infrared cameras and things of that nature that allow you to see that sort of thing, where you were seeing life as normal, but there was this added almost prism over it, or filter, if you will.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Definitely. I think it was, you know, people's auras.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly spirit auras too, because I would see things like beside them.
Independent of the person.
Yeah. So.
Now, is that something, I know you said as you got older, you kind of learned to block some of that stuff out, but if you're not blocking it out, is it still something that you can sense and see literally the way you did as a child today?
You know, it's a little different. I don't see the colors anymore, but I do. I still feel the spirits. I can sometimes see them. More I feel them, and I can feel like things they've been through, and I can hear their voices so they can talk to me. But so yeah, that's
yeah.
As I grew up, I didn't see the aura or anything.
With
so that disappeared.
With being a child and seeing those auras, and your mom kind of like, I don't see it, but you were clearly seeing it. Do you yeah. have a context to it of what the colors meant, of like who you were seeing it by? Was there anybody that you saw, you know, some clearly distinctive I don't know what the colors would be that represent negative, that, you know, around certain people that you ended up learning were not the greatest folks, but had a different aura than folks who were very positive or anything like that? Or were you too young to kind of make those connections?
I was really too young at the time to really even understand it or get what it was. So, and by the time, you know, I started figuring things out, it was, I was older. And, you know, when I realized it was spirits, it was, I think I was like maybe 8, 9, 10, right around there. And I wasn't seeing the colors anymore.
The colors had already moved away. So, yeah. I mean, some of the things that you're talking about here are pretty much the plot line for most horror movies that, you know, kids would be allowed to see somewhat in the 80s and 90s. Where, you know, the covers being ripped off, somebody's hearing voices and such. When you saw things like that in movies as a child, were you like, well, that happens to everybody?
I used to think it was normal.
Okay.
But, although my mom didn't see it.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know what to think of it at the time.
Yeah.
But like my blankets and stuff being pulled off of me and my radio turning on and things touching me at night, trying to shake me and wake me up and whispers. Yeah, that always scared me.
Do you think your childhood home was haunted, or do you think it's more you that
it was haunted? More me.
Okay.
Because I, our home was, we were the first family in it. So, and there was nothing, there's no other houses around. We were kind of out in the country.
Nobody's buried in the yard.
Yeah, it was a land that had, you know, there's definitely nothing on the land.
Sure. So, I mean, yeah, that's interesting that only you were picking up on that. And it's an interesting question and something I kind of wonder about quite often is, you know, are there, I mean, clearly there are locations that have a lot more activity than others, but a lot of people go, that place is haunted. The next people will move in and absolutely nothing will happen. Is it more that it's people that are haunted versus location, with the exception that, you know, some places just happen to be hotspots because of whatever sort of activity took place on there originally, but between the living?
Yes. For me, I would say I'm haunted. Because I have spirits that will follow me home from the different places that I do paranormal investigations. And every place I've been, I've had something follow me home.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
And usually it takes about a week before I can sleep real good again. The spirits that follow me home just sit there and, like, you know, they're picking on me all night long trying to keep me awake. But
when that's got to be, you know, a headache, to put it lightly. When did you first notice that something's following you home, considering that you are sensitive, empathic, and your whole life you've kind of been surrounded by things? When did you kind of connect those dots that I went on this investigation and now guess what, it's in my living room?
We went to Ashmore Estate, and that was like one of my first investigations. And it was, there was a Mary and Margaret that they have the spirits there are called Mary and Margaret. They were in the child's room. They were teenagers and they were sisters, just a few years apart. And I'm not sure exactly how they passed away, but yeah, that was the first time, like, the two of them followed me home.
So how did you identify that it was them that were in your house when you got home?
Boxes in the room that when you open it, the little thing that's been, yeah. And I would hear that at night. They would make that, I don't know how they do it, but they made their like little music box play in my room, even though I don't have it.
So you heard the sounds of a music box playing in your room and there was no music box in your room?
Yeah, there's no music box in my room. I would hear it. And it was the Mary and Margaret. It was the one that they had in their room.
Mm-hmm.
They had a little music box. And yeah. So I don't know exactly how they do that. But,
yeah, I mean, that's very, and you said this was one of the early times you investigated something. I mean, what did that, I mean, what got you into the idea of investing? Obviously, you've been surrounded by this, but was there some hesitation to go out there and seek more of it out, considering they already kind of come to you as it is?
Yeah, you know, I've always been interested in it because of the fact that I've always been sensitive to it. And, so yeah, I've always been interested in it. So,
yeah. So, I mean, does it give you more pause as far as deciding what locations you will and won't go to, or cases that you will or won't go and be a part of an investigation on, knowing that you're likely going to have something follow you home?
Yeah, it does. It makes me nervous. Like, if it's like, I don't know if I would ever go to the Conjuring house or, you know, something like mm-hmm. that. But I do have ways to protect myself. So eventually everything kind of settles down and they go back to where they came from. But
I guess yeah. that would be kind of the question is, you know, a lot of people will say I do this for protection, that for protection, so things don't follow me home. Is this frustrating for you where you do things there and say, you know, stay here or however you want to say it, and yet you still get people or things that straggle along with you no matter what you do?
Yeah. Actually, if I sage myself after leaving a location, you know, that does help some.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, cleanse any energy that could be trying to attach to me. And I also have like anointing oil and stuff like that. So I wear different crystals, like that black, I think it's called the black onyx.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it's called. Or obsidian or
obsidian. Yeah.
Yes. That's supposed to help ward off, you know, any negative or bad energies.
So, when you get things that follow you home, are they negative or bad energies, or what have you experienced as far as the gamut of what's decided to come home?
I've kind of experienced it all. Cause even when I was little, I had like a bad negative energy that followed me, and it took me years to get rid of it because I just didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably about 12 when it followed me home, and it's stayed with me until I was like in my late 20s. And, you know, that's when I learned how to sage and use crystals and
what,
you know, stuff like that.
What did it follow you home from initially at 12?
I really don't even know. I just know it showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So
what were the properties of it? What were some of the stories that when you look back on it, you know, yeah, this was definitely something negative.
I could feel like it was just a bad energy that it gave off. And it was like a shadow, like a darker than, it was darker than the dark. When you would look at it, and it was like a shadow type figure. And, the energy that it gave off that I was feeling just, you know, was really bad, and it, you know, bad intentions.
Mm-hmm.
It would try to keep me up at night.
How so? You know,
I'm sorry, what?
How so? How did it try to keep you up at night?
Trying to scare me. And when I feel spirits, like if they're down there, or if they're around my bed at night, I can feel them, and it keeps me awake. So this one, it was just, he would, you know, do things like shake my bed, mess with my radio. He hid in my closet a lot. and he would just be around my bed at night and I could feel him, and it just never felt good. Mm-hmm. So,
did that affect your, did it affect, obviously you can have experiences with living people, that are doing things that are going to make you feel, crappy or negative, you know, or upset or sad or depressed, whatever. Did this thing have an effect on your mood or your mental well-being, having something that long around
you? It was very oppressive. I definitely felt like it was definitely trying to make me depressed, and, you know, as a kid. So, and it was really scary because nobody, I would say something to my mom and my dad, and nobody, I don't know, they didn't believe me. So,
well, I mean, they didn't believe you, but I mean, you're feeling these ways, you're feeling down. I mean, granted, I get it, you know, mental health wasn't looked at quite the way it is today in the 80s and 90s. It was more like, shake it off, go find some friends. It's like, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah, that'll solve everything.
Get outside, get some sun.
Yeah, get some sunshine.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, thank you. But so, I mean, so having this kind of, you know, weighing on you, did you even understand at the time that it was, you know, something negative, or, you know, what these concepts even are, of like depression and things of that nature?
Yeah. I realized that it wasn't human because it didn't feel human. Mm-hmm. Like, I can feel humans, like their spirits. I can feel them. I can feel things they've been through. I can, you know, I feel like I almost like relate to them, like they share their feelings with me. And this one just, it felt bad. And usually whenever I get those negative entities, it feels like nothing. Like, I can't pick up on, you know, anything good. It's mm-hmm. like this blackness that is like this black hole is what it feels like.
Yeah.
And I could feel that his intent was just not good. Like, he just wanted, you know, he wanted to make me depressed, and, you know, ruin my life.
Yeah. I mean, so how did you kind of get a grip on that and say, nope, we're not going to let this have any more power? I mean, how did you eventually come to that conclusion and then kind of break out of it?
Well, you know, I would watch some of those haunting shows, and then I saw someone saging one time, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to try that. And it definitely made a huge difference, like with sleeping at night, and because that alone, if you're not getting the sleep that you need, then, you know, it's going to make you tired and feel depressed. And it was crazy.
So you start saging. I mean, is that all it took, was simply to, you know, break out a little extra sage and burn it and walk around the house? Or, you know, something like that, I would think, would take a little more energy, effort, intent, or something of that to really ward that away. Or did you ever really ward it away? Is it just kind of hanging out there in the shadows still, and there's something keeping it at bay?
You know, actually, it did go away finally. I was in my probably early 30s when it went away, but I started using the sage in my early or late 20s, and then I also bought like different crystals and stuff and put it around. I have that black crystal, the one I said earlier. I can't remember what it's called.
Sure.
Sorry. But I keep it by my bed, and it's supposed to help ward off like any negative entities, and I've noticed, you know, a huge difference with it. So, and I, you know, I do sage at least twice a week in my house.
If you don't, do you ever forget? Do you ever like, oh, I didn't sage this week, that's why this is happening?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
like what, yeah. What occurs then?
I can start hearing the voices and whispers downstairs, and then things touching my feet at night. Usually if I tell them, you know, don't touch my feet or don't leave me alone at night, they'll back off some.
Mm-hmm.
But I always sleep with my feet uncovered because I can't stand having my feet covered.
Mm-hmm.
But and so they would always grab my feet and like try to shake me, and you know, trying to wake me up. So, but yeah, that, you know, pretty much with the saging and everything, it definitely helps with that. And if I, you know, if I'm speak up and I say, hey, don't touch me, leave me alone, I'm trying to sleep. Most of the time they listen. So
That's interesting. And with the saging and with having a crystal by your bedside, I mean, how exactly does that work? And I guess why does that work is kind of the bigger question. If it just having it, this, the presence of it does something, do you have to believe a certain thing is going to take place, or that it's going to have some sort of power for it to take place? Because myself, I'm nowhere near as sensitive as you are, but if I just had an object or something like a crystal next to me, I honestly would be a little bit skeptical of it doing anything. Now, I'm not discounting other people who believe this and that have things that happen. I think that's true because they can really dive all in and go all in, and that intent really makes a big difference. Yeah. I am a very skeptical person when it comes to stuff, and it's like, I don't know that this rock or mineral is going to stop anything if it really has some sort of intent, or me walking around with stuffing sage is going to do much either. But I know that, you know, this is obviously something that people do and they swear by, but do you have to have the intent for it to work, or can you just go into it going, I'm gonna try this, I hope it works, but
Yeah, I think you do have to have the intent, and you also got to speak out loud while you're, you know, saging and stuff to let the spirits know to leave the home and open your doors and windows and try to, you know, get them all to leave. But yeah, I think it does help if you have the intent on, you know, and speaking out to them. Mm-hmm. And letting them know that this is your house, this is your space, that, you know, they don't have the right to invade it.
I always get hung up on the logistics of these things because it seems bizarre to me that you have to open a window or a door to get something like this out, where it's like, you clearly have a little more abilities than I would expect you to, or the fact that you even exist. I don't know that having to open the window really is needed to get you out, but again, people swear by it, that this works or that works. And I just kind of get like, why? Why does the window have to be open? Wouldn't the intent itself be strong enough? Or is it more so just an action or an invitation of, or like, here's a hint, like, you know, opening the door for your dog. You're like, come on, let's go to the door. But until you open the door, they're like, oh shit, the door's open. Yeah. Okay, let's go. Is that kind of what it's like? Do they need some sort of message or cue, if you will, that helps them do that?
You know, I've just have always been taught that that's what you do. You open the doors and windows on the first floor, and then you kind of sage from the top, then the bottom, and then you do the middle and get them all out. But I mean, it's worked for me, so.
Yeah. Again, it's worked for you. I guess my question, and this is just personal opinion. I'm not, you know, saying like everything here is set in stone by any means. But I mean, guess it's just, is it the action? Is it the human doing it that makes the difference? Or if I attached some burning sage and press start on the Roomba and just kind of let that thing go around the house with sage burning on top of it. And an old boombox that's just saying a prayer out loud or saying, you know, get the hell out, would that work as well? You know, it's the intent. I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and eat my dinner while the Roomba gets rid of the spirits.
Yeah, it's not going to work if you have the intent.
But I would have the intent by starting the Roomba and going to that much trouble of putting the stuff on the Roomba and moving it around. The intent is there. Yeah. It's more so the lack of ambition to walk around my house.
Yeah. That's funny.
So I don't know. I mean, I really wonder these things, and why is it sage, and why is it this or that? I mean, could you use basil if you had the same intent? Could you use, I mean, you know,
I know
catnip.
Like, I've used sweet grass before.
Okay.
But, so, which is kind of the same as sage. They kind of go hand in hand.
I wonder about, and it's not to discount anything. It's just, what are the answers to these questions other than just, this is what I was told to do, and this is what I have been taught to do. Okay, great. But I want to always go a little bit further back and understand, okay, well, why are we doing these things, though? So if I can understand better why, then it's easier for me to believe that they will work with the context. And that's where I get hung up on. And I'm always interested to hear people's opinions on some of these things, because I've never really gotten a good answer to these questions after doing hundreds of interviews. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And it's always just like, well, I think the closest I've gotten is simply it's intent. And like, you really could use, you know, you could walk around and spread kitty litter around your house instead of salt if your intent is the same thing as if you were to spread salt. But it's all about that meaning, if you will.
Yeah, definitely intent is a big part of it. I definitely agree with that.
So,
I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah. So I mean, tell me about, you know, you said as you got older, you learned to kind of start to block some things out, where, you know, I'm assuming it's just kind of getting to be a bit much, where you're having to deal with this all the time. How does one do that?
You know, I really can't explain how I do it, but I know that I'm able to, like, turn it off.
Yeah.
If I want to, like, just, you know, not pay attention to that kind of stuff. And it's at night more when it bothers me, because, you know, I'm trying to sleep. It's quieter. You hear more. But during the day, like, if I'm investigating, I can open myself up and I can, you know, feel the spirits and things they've been through, intent, that kind of stuff. But
is it more so, because I know a lot of people use the term blocking it out. Is it really blocking it out, or is it more so distracting yourself with something else rather than putting your energy or your attention over to that?
Yeah, I think it is kind of just, you know, putting your attention on something else.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I can't explain how I do it. But
yeah, I mean, I'm trying to understand.
My
I guess the analogy I would make is, you know, it'd be like someone saying, I turned off my sight. It's like, clearly you didn't turn off your sight. You can still see things. But an example of like turning off your sight, say you're driving down a highway at 75 miles an hour and you just decide, you know what? I'm not going to watch the road. I have far more important texts to be concerned with right now than not killing somebody. And you just start paying attention to the phone. You clearly can still see. You're reading your texts, but you're not paying attention to the road. So you're not seeing the semi coming at you at 75 miles an hour about to cause a major accident and probably kill you. But you are still seeing your text messages just fine. It's like shifting direction of focus, I guess, would be the way I would say it.
Yeah, it's definitely that is definitely what it is, for sure. You just focus, you know, you try not to pay attention to the spirits, and, you know, there's a lot more going on during the day than there is at night. So there's a lot of distractions so you just distract yourself with other things, is basically what it is.
And an interesting thing about distractions is with you having this ability and you knowing it and just being out in like, say, a mall, you know, back when people went to malls, back when they when they were a thing.
Before Amazon.
Yes. And there was large amounts of people there, not just the three strangers in the corner that have the bag of Skittles. And there's probably something in that paper bag that's not a Gatorade. And they kind of creepily walk around you know, and they're staring into the glow in the dark gulf that's in the old Sears. And they're just, they're not the most savory of characters, but they're there. They're wandering around. Are you more likely to pick up on something when you're in the mall with the three creepy, unsavory characters that are just kind of out there somewhere, versus a busy mall that has people, you know, bustling through, they're shopping, there's, you know, the strange Santa man with all of the yellow beard, because he clearly just chain smokes all year before he becomes Santa. Is it more difficult to pick out entities in a busy atmosphere versus a smaller or a less clustered atmosphere?
Yes, absolutely it is. And honestly, I pick up on people too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel people, their intent, and you know, stuff like that too. So I have all of that that distracts me also.
A lot of like white noise almost when you're in the big crowds and things of that nature. So harder. So this is an interesting thought I've had. If someone is sensitive, or if maybe not super sensitive, how often do you think it is that there are things going on in those large crowds that are paranormal, but nobody's noticing them because it's so busy? There's so many things going on. If you were a ghost and you wanted to get some energy from others, that would be a great place to do it, and also be noticed at the same time.
So what's your question? I'm sorry.
My question is, how often do you think those sort of things happen in large crowds where, you know, for example, you know, somebody's walking, you know, if you're by yourself and like, oh, I saw that person walking down that hall, it's a dead end, and you look back and they're gone, that would really stand out. But if there's 50 people walking down that hall and it's a dead end, and by the time they're, you know, walking around, there's only 49 of them, you're not going to notice like one's missing. Do you think they blend in? Do you think they do that sort of thing on a regular basis, or more than we're really aware of or able to kind of pick up on?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think they are around, like in like the mall situation, mm-hmm. Where there's a bunch of people. I do feel like they're there. They're always around us. But yeah, it makes it harder to pick them up when you're in a crowd, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I pick up on people, too. So it's like...
Sure.
Between the people that are alive and the spirits, I pick up on everything.
That wraps up part one of our conversation. In part two, what are some of the most surprising things that Julie has learned during the time she's been investigating the dead? We take a listen to several very clear spirit communications through a Phasma box. What you hear may shock you. That and more in part two.
Do you believe what they say about afterlife? If you ain't got no stake, why the hell do you need a knife? No breathe, can you breathe? I know it sucks to have a lonely night. I bet you never had the chance to think about your solo flight. About your solo flight.